Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, just whenever I finish the book. Do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for you people to download and listen to in your own time as and when and how you want to. Just a few things before I get into today's book that I'm going to review. Just a few bits of news because I forgot to mention stuff because I sort of recorded the last episode in a hotel room in the morning and I was sort of maybe a bit tired and a bit too much in a hurry, so I missed some things that I wanted to mention. But first of all, just a quick little story which some of you listeners might be interested in. Because I was going on a cruise ship, I work on... If anyone doesn't know, if this is the first time you've listened to this, I work as a professional juggler and often I work on cruise ships. And this time round, I was flown out to Fort Lauderdale to then take a cruise back across the Atlantic Ocean back towards Europe. And I had a morning, a night and then a morning and part of a day in Fort Lauderdale. And I looked up online to see what's there to do in Fort Lauderdale. Turns out not a lot you can do in just a few hours in Fort Lauderdale. Recognize the name, not just for being like the busiest cruise terminal in the world, but also to be the home of the James Randi Educational Foundation. If you don't know who James Randi is, he's like one of these top scientific skeptics, and he's got the $1 million challenge and all these other kinds of good stuff. So I thought, hey, he should be quite interesting. He works as a magician, or used to work as a magician, and I've heard him on different podcasts, and he always seems quite an interesting guy, lots of different stories. So, and he also says, if you're ever in Fort Lauderdale, pop along to the educational foundation that he runs there and have a chat. So I did, and I met up with James Randi and had a really, really great conversation about all kinds of different stuff. But at one point, we're sitting in the library there, and he mentioned, and I'd also already noticed there's a sign on the wall saying it's called the Isaac Asimov Reference Library, and it's just full of, you know, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of science books and books about the paranormal and religion and all different, lots of different kind of stuff. And I asked him, so why is it called the Isaac Asimov Reference Library? And he said, it's because I used to know Isaac Asimov. He was a friend of mine. And it turns out that he wasn't just a friend of Isaac Asimov, but lots of other different science fiction authors as well, in that sort of like East Coast, New Jersey, New York kind of grouping that they had. And all these names sort of rang a bell with me, and I was like, okay. And I was thinking, and I said, so were you, of course he said he lived in the same town as a lot of these people, and I asked him about why he knew them, and it turns out he was actually one of the members of a group called the Trapdoor Spiders, which of course, if you don't know who the Trapdoor Spiders are, you probably haven't read as much Isaac Asimov fiction as I have, and or know so much about sort of like geeky science fiction matters there. But it was actually really quite interesting knowing someone and hearing stories about we mainly talked about Isaac Asimov and the things that they got up to together and the letters that they wrote to each other and the stories that they had there. And it was just a really, really interesting situation there. And if you want to know more about that, just go to, like I say, go to my blog, lukeburridge.com/ blog. And I often post bits and pieces up there like that, but I just thought it was really interesting to actually sort of get like a bit of an inside scoop on what it was like to sort of be around the people, some of the top names in that, what they call the sort of the golden era of science fiction, although I'm not quite sure why it's called that. But I guess, you know, sort of you look back on those ages, not ages, those times, those decades, 60s, 70s, 80s, that kind of time, in with a lot of fondness, especially in science fiction realms, I guess. I've got some more notes here, just little bits and things that I was talking about. I got a note here saying, mention numbers for question show, and I can't remember what that note is about, so I'll come back to that one. Also, in my Dan Simmons, in the question show, I mentioned other books by Dan Simmons that I've read, and I mentioned a book called Heavy Weather, but I looked it up, and it's not by Dan Simmons at all, it's by Bruce Sterling. So, sorry about that little mistake there. Oh yes, the question show that I did out, I put it out and I got sort of like 1,000 extra downloads than normal, so I'm not sure if that was linked from somewhere or something like that, but I couldn't track down why it had, I think it was getting off about 1,800 downloads last time I checked it. And the actual review that I did of Dan Simmons Hyperion actually had less reviews than normal. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it's because people downloaded it twice. I'm not entirely sure, but I thought that was quite interesting. And also, last episode, I didn't realise it until I sort of like typed in the number of the episode number. It says it's 50, episode 50, so I actually gained that landmark there, 50 episodes, although there was a few special episodes on top of that, question shows and feedback shows on top of that. But I think 50 episodes is pretty good for any podcast. My other podcast, I think, topped out around about 60 episodes, I think. But 50 episodes, doing pretty well. And also, one final thing that I forgot to mention on my last review that I did of Philip Jose's Farmer, To Your Scattered Bodies Go. I was going to mention other books that I've read by him, and one that I would recommend. It's a bit silly, it's a bit pulpy, but it's called The Green Odyssey, and that's actually a story. So if you want to sort of like get feel of some of these sort of like oldie adventure stories, I think it was one of his first books, or it's listed first on the Wikipedia page of novels, not in a series. But yeah, check out The Green Odyssey, because it's a story with a mystery set on a different planet, a bit like To Your Scattered Bodies Go, but by the end of it, the main mystery there is all tied up. And I recommend this one because I was reminded of that book by Hyperion, because in the book Hyperion, they get on this boat. Well, it's not a boat, it's a sailing craft, but it sails across a big plain covered in perfectly flat big plain covered in grass, and that is one of the main things that happens in The Green Odyssey as well. It's the sort of like an odyssey on a green grass sea on sailing boats rather than on a blue watery sea. So anyway, check that out. Next up, I might as well just get straight to the review that I'm going to do today. I did a bit more there at the beginning of the podcast, mainly because I don't actually have a whole lot to say about this novel, or I didn't make that many notes as I was going through. But here we go. Instead of finishing any of the books that I have with me and that I can take with me, I thought I'd check out the library here on the cruise ship. And it's a quite new cruise ship, so most of the books in the library are quite new as well. And I found two science fiction books that look pretty interesting. One is a book by Charles Stross called Halting State. And I started having a look at that, but not only is it written present tense, it's written in present tense second person. So it's like, you did this and you did that and you applied to this job. And I got around about a page into it and thought, well, not a page, maybe four pages into it and thought, actually, I can't be bothered with this book for now. Maybe I'll try it again later, but I didn't. So then I picked up Joe Haldeman's The Accidental Time Machine. And because I just recently reviewed The Time Machine, I thought, hey, I'll now review The Accidental Time Machine. And so here it is. It's a hardback book, but not a very thick hardback book, written in copyrighted 2007, and let me just click to the end of the book to see how many pages it's got. It's got 278 pages, but they're sort of 278 like really quick pages as well. I think it's maybe the way it's printed. It's like lots of blank pages and lots of spaces between the type and stuff around the edge. So it reads pretty much like a 200-page book, which is actually quite good because it's very rare that you can get a really quick read. I managed to read this again just in a day and a half. But there you go. So, setting it up, we've got the world of the book. That's normally what I talk about. But this is, of course, it's a time travel book. So it starts off and it goes through lots of different places and times and stuff. But mainly it's set, well, most of the beginning of the book is set in Boston, specifically MIT College and different places in MIT. And actually, when you look inside the back cover of the book, it actually says a little like blurb about Joe Haldeman, blah, 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 Hugo Awards, Nebula Awards, served as the president of the Science Fiction Writers of America, and is currently an adjunct professor teaching writing at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. So it's somewhere this guy actually teaches, at least some of the time, obviously part of the year. I guess that's what an adjunct professor is. So he goes up there and he teaches a bit bits and pieces here and there. And so he obviously knows it quite well. And so when the book is set in MIT, you get lots of descriptions of not just the places, but sort of like the people who work there and the students and the faculty and all these other kind of stuff. So there's that's actually quite an interesting descriptive. Of course, like I say, it's a time travel story. We get to see lots of different times and places. I'm not going to give them away right here at the beginning of the review. That said, when the book starts, I just presumed it was sort of set present day because there was no little hints to say anything otherwise. But only when you get sort of halfway through the book and it says, oh, I come from this year, and you actually realize it's 40 years in the future. But again, as you start off the book, you would never guess that. So I'll just get straight into the story and explain some of the world as we go through it. The story follows a student, not a student, he's like a graduate student, but he hasn't got his PhD yet. He's just working as a lab assistant. His name is Matthew Fuller, Matt, his name is. And he's working on this device which counts protons or electrons or something like that. I think it counts, it releases one proton per cycle of something. Anyway, there's a little bit of techno babble in there, which I'm sure has got some basis in real science. But he presses the button, and the machine, this calibration kind of machine, disappears and then comes back after a second. And he's like, hey, what's going on here? And he presses the button again. It disappears for a longer amount of time, like 15 seconds, and it appears again. He's like, oh, this is very strange. But at the time, he'd been up like 30 hours or something, and he's and you find out that he's just been dumped by his girlfriend, and his job is sort of falling to bits. He's not really quite sure what's going on, and he realizes that what's happening is that every time he's pressing this button, the machine is actually transporting itself forward in time. And he presses it again, and it disappears for 25 minutes, say. I don't know how long it is, maybe 2 minutes. And then he presses it again, and it's 25 minutes, and so he works out what he's got. So what he does, instead of leaving it there in the laboratory, because he's like a technician, he's just building this this little device, so he takes it home with him and does some experiments of it on it, and he works out that he can send things in through time, forward in time, with this accidental time machine, as the name of the book is called. And in the end, he works out that it's safe for a living creature to go with him, because he sends a little tortoise through time, and that's it. And then then you find out that he starts going through time himself. But the way that it works is that every time he presses the button on the machine and it goes forward in time, it goes forward in like an exponentially further distance, longer time. Or is it like logarithmically expanding? So it's like about 12 times the length, 12 times the time of the last jump through time that the machine does. So that's why it starts off with a second. Actually, it says here on one of the pages. Let me just find it at the beginning of the book. It lists the times that it skips forward. Here we go. So it goes 1.26 seconds, then 15 seconds, then 176 seconds, and then 2,073 seconds, and then 6 hours, and then 3 days, and then 39 days, and then over a year, and then 15 years, that kind of thing. So it keeps going further and further and further. And he first presses the button when for him to travel through time. I'm not going to give it away, but he presses it, and he jumps 39 days into the future. And then he works out that the person he surprised by when he jumped forward in the future, and he just disappears in front of the person, he gets into a car. He makes the car jump through time. And when he does that, he surprises someone, and they keel over and die. I'm not going to give away why they die or what happens after that too much, but he gets into a little bit of bother. And he keeps jumping to get out of bother. He keeps jumping further and further forward in time. You know, after that 39-day jump, then he goes on a 465-day jump, and then a 5,493-day jump, which is 15 years. And actually, that all of that part of the story is really, really good fun, mainly because all of his motivations for jumping forward in time are really clear. They're really well set out. First of all, he does it because he wants to become a famous scientist, and he's like, I'm going to get a Nobel Prize. I've discovered time travel. And he sets up the experiment, even though he does it secretly. It's because he doesn't want his boss to find out that he's doing it, and then he gets fired, and then, you know, because of the trouble with his ex-girlfriend and stuff like that. And then he gets accused of murder, and he keeps jumping forward in time. And this was really, really good up until about page, let me just guess here, let me go to around about, what, page about 65, 70? Let's say about page 70, and it was really good up till there. And if the story had finished there, even though it was an accidental time machine and nothing had really been explained yet about the science behind it, about the questions, and there's a little bit of paradox going on, and going, oh, what's going to happen? Is he going to come back again from the future and help himself in the past set stuff up? Is there going to be some time looping there? And you don't actually know that by that time. And even up to a page, around about page 85 is pretty good and quite interesting, until he goes on the big jump into, like, the next big jump into the future, the few hundred years jump into the future. It's really, really good. I would be giving it like 4 to 5 stars as like a short story. But of course, that would only come to, say, I don't know, around about 10,000 word story, maybe, like, say, like, maybe a bit more than that. Yeah, but say about 85 pages, really, really good stuff. But then we just keep on going. And at this point, I'm thinking, okay, Matt is going to find out that he's a scientific genius, and he's going to solve the problem of what's happening. Why is he going backwards and forwards? No, why is it not backwards and forwards? Why is he only going forward in time? And why does the time keep, you know, the jump keep expanding as he goes through and stuff like that? And it's, you know, like I said, he's a bit hinted that he's going to go back and travel back in time and help himself. And I was like, wow, I can't wait to see what it goes. But then you know, like I say, it the skips that he does forward and forward, it's sort of like less and less reason and less motivation. And he keeps going further and further, both in time and space. And it just gets bogged down. First of all, we visit this sort of Christian theocracy set a few hundred years into the future after the second return of Jesus Christ. And that's sort of interesting, but doesn't really fit with what we've seen so far in the book. And then actually, as it comes down to it, doesn't add anything to anything after that part of the book either. Then we go further, we visit lots of different places. We actually visit the moon and Australia and Indonesia and Los Angeles, and we meet things like dinosaurs and artificial intelligences and all lots of different kinds of things like that. So it turns into just a big kind of adventure, sort of in the style of, like I say, 1960s kind of pulpy adventure kind of stuff, but not really as interesting. I mean, there's no danger, there's no tension of what's going to happen, because you know Matt's going to come through. And at one point, sort of being attacked by dinosaurs, and you think, oh, okay, this could be interesting, but it's not interesting at all. It just turns out to be, well, just stupid, really, at that point. And again, I talk about these different places that he visited and different adventures, but it just gets pointless. Because Joe Haldeman, he sort of goes, right, I'm going to just keep the story moving because I want it to be like fast-paced and adventurous. And it really is. It's a real page-turner. You know, I didn't have any problem with getting to the end of this book at all. But then he doesn't really have anything for the hero, Matt, and his love interest by that point and other people he meets to actually do along the way. And so he hardly even bothers describing these future worlds or exploring them or explaining anything about them. And I was really curious to find out what's going on, but there seems to be nothing going on, and protagonist Matt, he sort of lacks any curiosity at this point. And it's like, oh, well, I can't find anything here. And he's like, wait a second, you just jumped thousands of years into the future. There must be something to see. And they're just like, oh, well, let's just press the button again. And I'm like, oh, wait, aren't you meant to be solving problems? Aren't you meant to be doing anything here? But he's just so passive, you know, and the whole world is out there to explore. And it's just like, oh, no, going like this. So pretty much, yeah, once he leaves MIT, you know, for that, like, for the last time, once he leaves MIT, you're just thinking, yawn. I mean, that's like another 100 pages into it as well. So let's say, like, around about, what, pages 150 or something like that. Maybe around about 150. That's pretty good. But then from there on, it's just, no, a bit later than 150. I'm flicking through the book here. But yeah, it's sort of like the last 100 pages of the book you might as well just not even bother with. And then, of course, you're getting right to the end of the story. But I'm still reading it. I'm still really enjoying it. Still, it's like real page turner. And they get up to around about page, what, 200, 220 or something like that. And I'm thinking, wow, this is really complex. There's a whole lot of different ideas going in here. And it's explaining there's loops of time and he could have gone forward and backwards in time, not quite sure. And I'm thinking, wow, he's only got like 30, 40 pages to like tie up all the loose ends here and for Matt to, you know, find out the secret of it and do all that kind of stuff and work out and defeat the baddie, you know, because there's sort of like a slight villain being introduced nearer the end of the book. That's the thing with time travel stories. It's really hard to have a main antagonist in a time travel book, because unless they're following you through time, or they're following the protagonist through time at the same time, it's actually quite hard to do that. So that's a bit strange, and it's really complex. And then, you know, nothing happens at the end. Literally, you just, what happens is there's this a bit sort of bizarre, unexplained deus ex machina, like of the worst kind, and then Matt just settles down and gets married, and that's it. And really, when it comes to time travel books and science fiction in general as well, I don't mind paradoxes, and I don't mind technobabble, and I don't mind sort of accidental time machines, you know, and accidents, and I don't mind massive coincidences and all that kind of stuff. But what I really do mind is completely ineffective passive protagonists and deus ex machinas just to get them out and wrapping up the story. And of course, the wrapping up of the story and the explanation of the time travel is like so vague and disappointing and sort of irritating at the same time that you're not being fulfilled in that way. And also it's inconsistent with itself. It's like, okay, if we do go with the explanation that is given here in this book, and he does manage to sort of create this time loop, what that leads to when you actually read literally the last three lines of the book doesn't make sense and is completely inconsistent and inconsequential at the same time. So for a book and a story that starts so well, it goes downhill so quickly at the end, Well, it sort of starts tailing off, like I say, about two-thirds of the way through. I mean, really, really tailing off two-thirds of the way through. And you know, like, even after the jump that he does into this, a few hundred years forward, into this sort of Christian, like, theocracy kind of place that he ends up, there's still, like, a chance that Matt himself is going to do something and get himself back on track and solve something. And then after the few thousand years jump, I was, like, a bit nervous. And then after that, like I say, it just all just falls apart. So, story, really, like, zero stars out in the end for the story, even though it was keeping me wrapped up all the way through. Get onto some of the characters. Matt, the main protagonist, is quite intriguing to begin with, anyway, and he slowly over time becomes, like, more sociable, in a way, because he starts it and he's a complete, you know, outcast and geek and can't really live, he can't work and stuff like that. Like I said before, he's struggling to keep his job and his girlfriend's just dumped him and things like that. But it turns out, actually, of course, by the end, like I say, his only solution to the problem is pressing the button and keep jumping further and forward in time and without actually learning anything, except he does get a little bit more sociable as he goes through. And we're told he's not much of a scientist, and I kept thinking, oh, he's going to become a scientist, but of course he doesn't all the way through, and he never applies any kind of scientific reasoning or logic to any of his own life problems at all. And I actually quite like that, even though it's a bit frustrating to say, what do you do that for? What are you doing? Why don't you just, like, think and use logic? But he never does, and it's a bit weird. He's got a professor, which we really only meet at the beginning of the book, and that's quite fun. And then there's this whole situation with his ex-girlfriend and his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend, and that was actually the setup there. It was actually really quite interesting. And it's one of those kind of things that you think, wow, and you think, oh, okay, maybe Joe Haldeman knows someone at MIT who's been in that kind of situation. But then, of course, once you get past that first third of the book, all of these interesting characters are forgotten. And then, like I say, at one point, he does get a love interest, another love interest past his ex-girlfriend. And you can tell it's the love interest, and you know it's going to happen, because as soon as you meet her, she is now the only available female character that the protagonist meets, that Matt meets in the entire book. And her name is Martha, and I really don't want to talk about her much because she's quite infuriating, and the less that I can say about her, the better. But there is a love story there, and it really revolves entirely over Matt. Pretty much, he just pervs over Martha. That's all he does. He just sits there and lusts over her. And there's, like, long explanations about her innocence and her naivety and how she doesn't know anything about sex and that she doesn't mind being naked because, you know, she's only ever been in the same room with women, and she always slept in the same bed as her sisters and her other people, you know, her fellow female students at college and stuff like that. She doesn't mind being naked. And this could have been something really quite sweet. Even though Matt is obviously not very experienced with women, he gets someone who's even less experienced with men, or with the opposite sex. And, like I say, it could have been sweet, but it turns out just to be a little bit creepy. And there's, like, three or four points in the book where we're sort of teased with the possibility of some kind of sex scene or some kind of sexual stuff going on between them. And, you know, there are a few points, like, Matt and Martha are like, in bed together, and she's naked. And then another point, he actually gets his penis out, and it still leads nowhere. And I'm just thinking, this is just a little bit weird. This is just a bit weird. But then I thought, no, this is genius writing, because we're being put in the same position as Matt, because he's continuously frustrated by sort of like this promising lure of this sexuality in front of him, Martha being naked in front of him, but he doesn't have any courage. He's completely, like I say, he's a bit passive, and he's always like, oh, I'm not really sure what to do. I don't want to come off as bad. I don't want to take advantage. Oh, I'm not really doing it. I don't really want to say what I want. And there's this weird thing where they watch pornography, and it's just a bit strange. And it turns out that by the end of the book, they tell each other that they love each other, and I'm thinking, wow, here it comes. But then there's no sex scene. And I'm thinking, this, you know, all the way through up until the end of the book, I was thinking, this is great, because we're living with Matt. We're in his head. We have the same kind of frustration as he does. But then there's no payoff. And at the end, there's no sex scene by the end. They just get married. And I'm like, what the hell? And we're just told, after all of that, like, massive build-up, like, all this foreplay going on, where it's not really foreplay, but sort of, like, a literary foreplay with me, the reader. And then we're just told, oh, and they had four kids together. I'm like, well, we don't even see what in bed. And it's not like I want to read explicit sex scenes. I mean, I don't mind, because, you know, I'm a grown-up and all that. But, you know, the whole relationship between Matt and Martha was one-sided, mainly one-sided, and it was completely sexual. You know, there was nothing else going on between these two characters except Matt perving over Martha and Martha being a bit innocent, and then, you know, he's the only man Martha's ever met, so of course she's going to fall in love with him or something, maybe? I don't know. I'm not really quite sure how it works out with these weird fiction, you know? It's a bit weird. So there's, like, this constant flirting and then zero payoff. And again, it wouldn't have been too bad, except that it combined with the massive disappointment in the payoff of the whole time travel aspects of the book as well. That'll be enough about that, going on about sex too long again in these reviews. Technology. The time machine is accidental, so there's not much point going into that. We get some little, I say, a little bit of like techno-babble jargon kind of stuff to sort of explain it away with string theory or something, but nothing really. I mean, it's just skipped straight over. Even though we're told that the person who works this kind of thing out gets a Nobel Prize, it's not a lot of, you know, no detail at all there. And the other technologies involve... Well, let me put it this way. Groundbreaking concepts in science fiction such as, holograms. There's holograms and artificial intelligences. And there's a spaceship and a tractor beam. And there's a car that runs not on fuel but on batteries. Yeah, I just made a note here. Bit underwhelmed by the scope of the book, like in terms of science fiction ideas and technological ideas. For a story that's meant to start 40 years in the future from now... and then only go forward in time, it was, like, distinctly lacking in anything, really, except the base idea of time travel. But then again, it really wasn't about the technology. I guess it was more about the journey through time and about the character, but then there wasn't a whole lot of character to it either, and then there was not a whole lot of plot or story to it, and all the tension sort of faded away at the end. So, yeah, I guess when you get all of that and then no technology on top of it is a bit strange. Then there's the main theme, which I guess is the theme of the book is, hey, Joe Haldeman wants to write another time travel thing in the same formula as the Peace War, but make it a bit more light, you know, a bit more, I'd almost call it sort of like, it's pitched to like a young adult kind of, you know, I think that's the term, is a YA novel, young adult kind of thing. But then it's not really either, because, you know, they watch pornography and he ejaculates over someone. So I wouldn't really call it that either. So... I guess the only other main theme, except that Joe Haldeman wants to write time travel, is there's a bit about religion in there. Of course, they go to a religious theocracy, but it's like it's so such a clumsy portrayal and unbelievable. It's like hardly worth it, you know, because bashing religion is really easy, and so much science fiction does bash religion, but this does it in such a, like I say, a bit of a bland sort of like, yeah, seen it all before kind of way, that there's not a lot to it. And he does sort of like take some jabs at the opposing institution, which is sort of like the university and academia and, you know, technology and science itself. But it's sort of like obviously very affectionate and in sort of an endearing kind of nudge there. And later on in the book, we do see this sort of small exploration on some kind of economy kind of thing. It's sort of like this society based on... I guess it's some kind of shopaholic society based on bartering goods between each other. But then in the end, nothing comes of it. Like everything else in the last two-thirds of the book, nothing actually comes of it at all. And it's all fluff. And I guess that's what this book is. It's really all fluff. To sum up the writing style as well, Joe Haldeman really can write. It's a real page turn. There's a lot of humour in the book. I've not really gone into it, but it is actually really fun to read. As long as you don't know how disappointing it's going to be at the end. Like, there's constant cliffhangers all the way through. Every time he pushes the button, you're like, okay, it's going to be a whole new world. What's going to happen here? Very much like the Forever War in that sense. You know, in the Forever War, they go off to a new mission, and then they come back, and all the time they come back to Earth or wherever they're going to come back to, it's always going to be, hey, what's going to happen? What's it going to be like now? What's going to have been turned on its head? And that was really good up until the last third of the book, when everything just gets really bland, and his sort of he just can't write dying Earth fiction to save his life, I guess. Like, that's all I can say, really. But otherwise, the formula does work for the most part of the book. So, yeah, but let down by the ending. So what did I put down here? Oh, yeah, I haven't really worked out star rating on this one. As I was reading, I enjoyed it. And I can't say how much I enjoyed the beginning of the book. Again, read this book. The first 60 pages, like, get it from the library or find it in a secondhand bookshop. Read the first 60 bit. No, tell you what. Read up to page 85, I guess, around about there. Go all the way up to 85. Chapter 11. Stop at chapter 11. Don't read any further. Instead, just use your own imagination and imagine what can happen after that, but not influenced by what I've said already. Sort of use your own imagination and come up with an end to the story, because tell you what, it's better than what's in this book. And if you don't want to do that, read the first 85 pages or maybe the first 60 pages or something like that, and then go and watch Back to the Future. Actually, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, because that's got the whole thing. Hey, in the future, what we can do is go back in time and put this here. I think that's the film, is it? Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure or Bogus Journey or something like that, and they're like, hey, I went back in time and I placed this in my pocket, and then they go, and it's in my pocket, and they bring it out. It's like that kind of thing. You're like, yay! Of course, that doesn't happen in this book, but that's a better explanation of actually the stuff that goes on in this book than what we actually get in this book. So there you go. Short review of a short book, and I'm going to give it 2 stars, I think. Maybe 3 stars. Again, I don't really want to give it 2.5 stars because it's not an average book. It's definitely a sub-average book. Let me put it this way. First half of the book, 3 stars, 3.5 stars. Combined with the second half of the book, 2 stars. Overall, I'm going to give it... I'll give it 2.5 stars. Sort of like a middle-of-the-road kind of thing there. So, the next book that I'm going to read... Well, it doesn't really matter which book that I'm going to read, because I'm probably going to upload this podcast and the next podcast at the same time, because I'm sure I've finished this podcast by the time I next have internet access, which is going to be in the Azores. There's not an internet cafe, but there's a cafe there that I know has high-speed internet connection. So I'll upload this podcast, maybe the next podcast afterwards. But the next book I'm probably going to try Halting State by Charles Stross. You know, even if I don't finish it, I'll give it a go. Otherwise, I do have the... Crystal Rain by Tobias Espakel that I can take with me and read on the flight home, as I also have books on my iPod, like The Final Circles of Paradise, which I read another few chapters of that. I'm getting through it slowly. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed this kind of stuff. If you wanted to find out more about what I'm doing or got any feedback, email me, luke@juggler.net. Best way to do it, follow me on Twitter. You find out lots of little bits of stories. For example, we're now heading off. We've been diverted to Bermuda because this morning there was an announcement, even in the cabins, and it said, Lido Deck, code Brightstar. And so I was remembering about Code Brightstar, what's that kind of thing? And it turns out Code Brightstar means someone's died on board the cruise ship. So we're going to, we're now on the way to Bermuda. It's sort of on the way anyway, the island of Bermuda, to drop off the body at the pilot station there at Bermuda. And of course, I mentioned little things like this, which I'd never normally mention on the podcast or my blog. I put that kind of little things up there on Twitter, if you're interested in that. Luke Burridge. @LukeBurge or something, or just follow my blog, which is lukeburge.com/blog. Although I have just been sent a message saying, hey, the RSS feed on it's not working properly. So thing is, I'm not going to use the internet access here on the ship to get into that and discover what's going wrong there. That'll have to wait until I fix the blog later on. But I'm still going to post stuff there. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.